I have it as well.
Okay, so good morning, everyone. So happy to start this new series of learning together on this Monday morning in this holy spot of 11 a.m. Today, it's an auspicious time, of course, to start a new series, a learning series, today being Rosh Chodesh, Aleph Mar Cheshvan, Tavshin Pei Aleph. Now, it's always a famous little joke among the Rabbanim, the rabbis, there's no Mar in the month of Cheshvan. Of course, the month of Tishrei has been filled with so many Yomim Tovim, celebrations where we've had sermon after sermon. Now, that's a usual year, and while this year is unique and different, but of course, we hope that the month of Cheshvan will not, in fact, be one that's bitter, but one will be filled with spirituality and growth and connection. And so I'm so happy that this class falls out to be able to start this next series of learning today on Rosh Chodesh. I wish you and your families a Rosh Chodesh Tov, a good Chodesh. And we should look forward to growing together through Limud HaTorah. I just want to begin by way of, before we introduce the topic and what we're going to spend the next few weeks going through. I think that hopefully it'll feel hopefully meaningful and inspiring. And I think it's very timely and hopefully a bit transformative. But let me begin by just thanking our sponsors for this morning's class, to Yossi and Annie Rabinowitz, new family that recently moved into our community, sponsoring this morning's shiur in commemoration of the yahrzeit of Annie's father, Shlomo Ben Yaakov. His neshama should have an aliyah and b'schus and the merit of Limud HaTorah, of course, which should be a merit for the deceased and for the entire family. And they have Yibod L'chaim also sponsored today's class in honor of our Rebbetzin and her husband and the entire community. So we thank you so much, Yossi and Annie, for your sponsorship. And in Mirtz Hashem, we'll be able to be inspired together. Okay, so the format for this session, of course, it's a little bit more daring. You know, whereas in the past, it's been more lecture style. It's certainly a little bit easier via Zoom. It's always harder when you have the transmission of Torah material on the, you know, on the internet or in this portal. When we're learning live, which Mirtz Hashem will be able to get to, we're going to hopefully have over the next number of weeks, we're going to explore the possibility of having a dual option, an in-live person option and also a Zoom option for those who are less comfortable to be in person. But what we're going to do with a Gemara shir or a Sugya shir is try to present the material, but also I don't want to miss the opportunity for the give and take, for the back and the forth. So what I'd like to do is we'll get through a certain section or a source or two at the time. There's six primary sources, although there's a number of others that I want to share with you. And then maybe you'll compile some questions that you might have, and then we'll take kind of like intervals in between. So this way we can get to certain themes, certain sources, main sources. And then please, I do invite conversation. I do invite questions, and we won't see them as interruptions of what we're saying. We'll just introduce those question opportunities kind of in the intervals that will make it that it will flow a little bit more steadily. But as with all classes, all shiurim, I welcome your feedback. I, of course, welcome your participation. I look forward to it. It's a Teres Chaim, and certainly not only in general, but the topic that we're going to discuss is one that I believe is going to elicit good conversation and I'm sure, no doubt, commentary and question. Okay, so let's begin. So the idea here, after surveying a number of people, is the idea to do like survey of sugyas and shas and to try to discuss kind of a Gemara-themed type of learning here this Monday morning. And the idea is really to kind of see one topic through from kind of the beginning, a middle and end, and try to see what and how that topic applies to practical learning and practical living. Now, learning Gemara is something that we do as part of whether it's a Daf Yomi cycle or even if it's not a Daf Yomi. Sometimes it seems that there are sugyas that are esoteric, unrelatable, or more difficult to understand. We're learning Maseches Eruvin now. For those of you who are studying the Daf Yomi, we know that it's very, very difficult, the sugyas and the complexities that are involved, but it's, of course, still Nogei Lamaisa. The sugya that we're going to discuss now and introduce now is very much Nogei Lamaisa, which means it's very much applicable today. And the sugya that I thought would be appropriate to start with is Losamar Al Dam Re'echa, which means to what extent do we go to save lives? And this is something that Chazal has been dealing with, obviously, since the time of the Gemara. It's a pasuk in Chumash and Parshas Kedoshim. But I think that the application of Losamar Al Dam Re'echa as it applies to today and actions that people should be taking or people might think that they're taking or perhaps negligent or otherwise that people are not doing, how much does it play into Dine Doraisa? To what extent is it Mamari Chazal? Where is it that we can find and point really to sources in Chumash and Gemara to know that there's an obligation of the Samar Adam Riecha? Is it what we refer to as Shei Valse, or is it a Kumva Ase? Shei Valtase means, am I just passively in fulfillment of that by not doing certain things? Or is there a Kumase? Is there an element that I have an obligation to rise up, to stand tall, to do certain activities or actions? Is there certain things that I am obligated to do? To what extent am I obligated vis-a-vis financially? What extent am I obligated vis-a-vis, physically or emotionally? So maybe I, under the auspices of Lasam and Adam Riecha, do I have an obligation to go over to somebody, for example, we might see is in a public location, not wearing a mask or not socially distanced from other people, if that's the guideline of, basic normative healthcare medicine, Losam Adam Riecha might obligate you. Not just it's a good idea, but it might obligate you. Maybe a person is offended by how you've done it. Maybe there's a way you have to do it. But we're going to explore a little bit the sugya as it relates to contemporary cases, as it really resonates very deeply and unfortunately has fractured and separated and created a bifurcation even within the Jewish community in a very profound way. And I think that the goal is just to learn the sugya as opposed to castigate or to judge, but really to learn the sugya and to know what makes best sense and best practice moving forward. So let's understand this just from a kind of a from an introduction, Hakadama point of view. So saving lives, of course, as we know, is one of the most basic and obvious acts of human goodness, right? We all know to what extent you can save your own life to save other people's lives, and is of paramount importance in Jewish practice. And even the idea of suffik pikuach nefesh. I mean, pikuach nefesh, it goes without saying, that's obvious. To save someone's life or to save your own life. But pikuach nefesh, that's obvious. But even suffik pikuach nefesh, if it's doubtful life-saving measures, so then even that, we say that that's not only permissible, but mega advisable. I mean, I can tell you, and I know this is going to be disseminated and is being recorded, just the idea of where local schools even have had conversation about just even in shuls and federation and various other, just not even within just our local community, but even beyond. To what extent do you have an obligation to, let's just say, you know that there's a positive COVID-19 positive affirmed case, and now you don't know to what extent you have tracing that you've done, to what extent you're knowing where the person is positive, how far they were exposed, to what extent, how far reaching it was they're exposed. So what is your obligation? Do you have to set up an Eino Yehudi to go around? Let's say you have a school. A high school finds that there's a case. This is not the hypothesis. This is actual. There's a case that's found that there's a positive, affirmed case in a high school, and that there's contact tracing, and they realize that it's Shabbos or it's Yontif, and they don't know if they're going to be able to inform everybody. So what's the din? Do you say that you rely on Eino Yehudi? Do you say that maybe you're not going to be able to reach everybody? Can you say that if there's no Eino Yehudi, there's no non-Jew, you could actually tell a Jew? What are the preventative measures? Do you say that, well, no, medicine would say statistically that there's within a certain age bracket that, they're not going to fare poorly with coronavirus, for example, or any illness for that matter, but specifically for coronavirus. And so therefore, no, Chal Shabbos and Chil Yontif is doicha that. Since we know that the coronavirus is not only it's novel, but it's also unknown to what extent a person who has it, how much they can transmit the contagion, obviously that makes it is it a din of a rodef? Are you in violation of not, caring for the nishmarta modus nafshu seichem yourself, but also the lives of others? Even a person might be asymptomatic, for example, and might do well with the coronavirus. Maybe somebody else who would catch it obviously might not. So that's, is that a din of a rodef? Is it shev al taisa, the fact that you haven't done anything? Are you over in isadaraisa of losam al dam reacham? These aren't hyperboles. These are not exaggerations. These are not conceptuals. These are real cases that are happening. To what extent is there contact tracing? This is also true, by the way, not just in the case of coronavirus, but even in a situation where a number of years ago there was a penetration in our shul where there was somebody who was a foreign body that came in and was asking a whole host of different questions. We found them to be of a certain orientation that was questionable and worrisome. We had to alert the authorities, and they came to the premises. The person had since left. But the question then became, like, to what extent do we have an obligation to alert other shuls, other institutions? What is our mechanism from even doing that? I remember presenting to our local federation, and to their credit, they've really worked hard to try to create a kind of like a a master headboard, like a keyboard and a switchboard of communication to be able to say that if there's a problem in area A, you know, God forbid, if there was a potential infiltration of a security breach in area A, and they were able to escape, that person who was the potential perpetrator to escape in area A and then enter into area B. So obviously we have to be able to alert people in area B of the possibility of that happening. So this isn't just medicine, but this is also obviously terrorist activity, Rahman al-Islam, or anything for that matter. Is it a function of Osama al-Dam Re'echa? So we know that this is something that the Torah considers saving lives of absolute chiyuv. It's an absolute obligation. And we're going to obviously understand the permutations as it applies to our lives. It's not just like a good idea or a good deed. But the question, of course, is how far does the chiyuv extend to saving lives? Like, what is the extent of it? Like, what if you had to spend all your money to do that? Would you be obligated? Are you obligated to spend your money to save somebody who maybe they're not necessarily going to be saved? Maybe they're going to have a lower quality of life. Who determines that? So in this set of shiurim, we're going to examine this section of the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin about saving lives, and we're going to explore some of the Talmudic literature associated to answer really kind of like four key questions. And here are the four key questions. The first is, to what extent is a bystander obligated to take proactive measures to save a life? We're going to talk about the bystander syndrome. Number two is, does Judaism actually even require spending money to save a life, and how much? That's what we mentioned already. Now, who pays the bill for, let's just say, a rescue mission that turns out to be unnecessary, right? You decide you're going to send in the troops, and all of a sudden it's unnecessary. Either the person, you know, Lo'alenu, died, or somebody saved them already. So now who pays the bill? And finally, and no less importantly, do I have to endanger myself to save someone else who is in danger? And of course, that speaks about the medical doctors and the nurses and the healthcare professionals who literally have endangered their own lives. That's why we call them heroes. To what extent does a person have to endanger themselves to save another person who themselves are in danger? Okay, so that's kind of like the hakdama, the introduction, how much of a value we place on this. L'osamad al-dam re'echa, this pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, it is from this sugya that we're going to learn is from the Gemara Masechet Sanhedrin, Ayin Gimel Amud Aleph. If you want to look at it inside in the Tzuras Adaf, that's the classic edition. It's in the 8th parak, Ben Sorer Umore. Ayin Gimel, folio 73a, top and middle of the Gemara, and I kind of like just cut and paste it a little bit for you. Okay, so far, so good. Thumbs up, so far, so good. Introduction, all right, good.
So far, so good.
So far, so good, thank you. All right, good. But definitely feel free to chime in, okay? Good. So let's go. So in 1968, the social science researchers, two by the name of John Darley and Bib Latante. I'm not sure if I'm saying Latane rather. I'm not sure if I'm saying his name right. So they coined the phrase bystander effect. You know, what's the bystander effect? Such cases where you sometimes like rubbernecking, right? You see people rubbernecking. Onlookers, they don't come to the aid of a victim. So the bystander, it's actually a psychological effect that many psychologists and social researchers have identified, right? In fact, some science research has discovered that the more bystanders that there are who witness an emergency, the less chance that there's going to be anyone who's going to help out. You can find articles upon articles about how there are so many people who saw things. The more that there are, the less chance that person's going to be helped. But let's just use the bystander effect. Like, the question is, how does the Torah teach us to react if someone's life is in danger? What is it that a person has to do? So let's start with source number one, the Gemara in Sanhedrin again. And Gimel Amud Aleph, a person we know has to attempt to save someone who's in danger. So the Gemara says, Minayin l'roes chaveir sho toveya benar. From where do we know that a person who sees someone who's drowning, ochaya, or he's being dragged by a wild animal? And actually, I'll just have you notice, as we're starting with the Gemara, you were going to see that there's a Shulchan Aruch, and then there's the Rambam, who's going to use almost the same language, but actually use some nuances of language. It's important to just focus on the language, because we're going to see that it extends beyond these examples. Now, that's part of how Chazal has to figure out, do we say that obviously you're not seeing somebody, hopefully not being dragged by a wild animal, but the example is going to be used to obviously be extended to other examples of the similar. So if this person's Toveya Banar, Uchaya, Gerartoy, a list in buying a love. So, or not only being dragged by a wild animal, but let's say a person's being threatened by listin. What are listin? Listin are robbers or bandits or thieves. So how do we know that olav, so of this person, bon olav, shu chayiv latzilo? How do we know that it's chayiv? So the Gemara is not asking if you're chayiv. The Gemara is saying, how do I know that you are chayiv? There is an obligation. Talmud lomar, Osamod Aldam Reacha. If you see somebody's in danger, you have an obligation to go to that person and to save that person. You cannot stand idly while your fellow's blood is being shed. And even if it is just a precautionary activity, it seems that this Osamod Aldam Reacha also applies. So what we see is that the Torah teaches that a person must not stand idly when his fellow's blood, his life, is at stake. Now, in one sentence, literally, the Torah gives us a very clear directive. The Gemara interprets this pasuk as applying to bystanders, witnessing an emergency situation or crime threatening someone's well-being. So it doesn't have to just be that a person collapsed, but it also means that if somebody's doing something that's threatening somebody's well-being, we have an obligation, a biblical one-sentence obligation, L'samad Adam Riecha, obligates a person to care for the needs of that person and the needs of other people that you might not necessarily see. Now, what is the Jewish value that underlies this mitzvah? Like, what is the value? I mean, it's not just like a din. You know, anytime you have a din, halacha, a shulchan aruch, a posik, we have what we call taimei mitzvahs, the reason for the mitzvahs. There's like, I like to refer to, you know, the Sefer HaChinuch or the Minchas Chinuch, where there's a deeper understanding of what the value is. Because Judaism is not just a book of laws that are just like, do this and don't do that without deeper meaning. There's intrinsic value where people of faith are people of value. So what is the value of this? So this is based on the following observation, explaining why the Ribbono Shel Olam created the animal kingdom in pairs, which is of course appropriate for this coming week's parasha in Parshas Noach. We see that the animals, kosher, pure and impure, go in pairs. Yet Adam was created alone. But Adam is created alone. So that's source number two. The Gemara in Sanhedrin, earlier in the Gemara, I didn't just make a faux pas and switch 73 and 37. No, the Gemara in Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph says that saving a life is comparable to saving the whole world. It's the Gemara that I referenced in my Shabbos afternoon, Bein Mincha V'Maariv, we were learning together. Look at the Gemara in source number two, also Sanhedrin. Lefichach nivra adam yechidi. You should know that the Bali Musar, the Ramchal, and Derech Hashem, and the Mesilas Yisharim, and various other sources quote that sentence, quote actually this Gemara. You see the difference between the animal kingdom. Here it's in pairs. Here you see adam is nivra adam yechidi. The man was created alone. We had in last week's parasha, and of course in this week's parasha, juxtaposing that they're going to be saved in pairs, the animals. Lamedcha shekol ha'ma'amid nefesh achas. That means that this lamedcha to teach us that anyone who destroys one life is considered is achas malal levakosu kilu ibeid olam mole. It's as if they destroyed an entire world. I'm so saddened. I think that part of what's happened as part of people's reticence and negligence is that people are no longer conscientious of this Gemara. They don't think about this Gemara. You know, we've been talking so many years about what I think now is almost like kumbaya. Now, maybe not even really something that people feel so much. Achenu, the one Jew, the one person, the one sensitivity. You have to have, look how much one person can do. Like, I believe this, and that's what the Gemara is telling us. But I don't think people necessarily are living their lives as if they believe this. If even one person's life is in danger, if even one person died as a result of negligence. So obviously that's like major. It's as if they weren't just illicit in a relationship that caused a life to be lost in one capacity, but it's ibeid olam mole. Of course, the flip side is also true. It's as if a person preserved an entire world. We look at like one person. Somebody's telling me over the past number of days, you know, Rabbi, here's the problem. The problem is that there's two classifications of people. Either a person has it and they did well with it and they have antibodies, right? And therefore, if they have antibodies, they might have been concerned about it beforehand, but they're not concerned about it anymore because their threshold is they now have freedom to be able to kind of do whatever they want. And so therefore, there's now been a general diminishment of a sensitivity to a population of people who really don't want to get it and shouldn't get it and maybe are more certainly at risk because of their situation. Now that's classification number one. Number two is that some people just never ever were compliant with certain rules, and they never felt there to be a risk. They never saw themselves as a mazik, and obviously that's worrisome and cumbersome in this context. Because if a person thinks about it of nefesh achas, whether it's ma'abed olamole or it's kiem olamole, that's a huge distinction. This is the value why This is saving one life is comparable to saving the entire world. We don't see it that way, which is why, as I've said a number of times in a number of drushes that I'm sure you've heard me say when we talk about just like Yisker, remembering the those who perished al Kiddush Hashem. The number we talk about is 6 million Jews who died and perished al Kiddush Hashem. Actually, we know that it's much more than that. A Holocaust survivor once said to me, "Rabbi, don't say 6 million Jews. It's 600 million Jews." Sometimes, if you remember, sometimes I'll say that. It's 600 million, it's way more than that. I mean, generations and generations, worlds, every person is a world. Every person is a life that's a world, that's a generation, that if it's lost, generation after generation is lost. So that's the value. It's not just you stand idly because it's a good thing to do. It's not just the Samar al-Dam Re'echa means that you should not stand by idly just because his blood is being, it's a good practice. No. There's a value. There's an intrinsic Jewish value. And this value is the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Lamed Zion, that it's comparable to saving the entire world on account of the infinite value of a human life. Even if it is that a person doesn't value their own life, and that's also going to be part of, there's a lot of literature about, let's say a person doesn't want to value their own life. Let's say a person commits suicide or is suicidal. Do you have an obligation to save that person who doesn't even want to save themselves? So nonetheless, we'll get to that. We're prohibited from standing by when somebody's life is endangered. There is a proactive, this is a very important point, there is a proactive obligation, chiyuv, to save him. Now, does this depend on the expected duration or the quality of the life in question? I'll do one more source, then we'll stop for just a moment. And this is a great book, which I recommend you have in your library. Rabbi Dr. Akiva Tatz, who's a noted author, fabulous speaker, well-known educator. He wrote a book, among the many books he's written, is Dangerous Disease and Dangerous Therapy in Jewish Medical Ethics. He wrote this, I believe, with Dr. Fred Rosner, who's also an erudite. You can get it on Amazon, I'm sure. So again, Dangerous Disease and Dangerous Therapy and Jewish Medical Ethics. So he recognizes in his excerpt, which I cut and pasted, recognizes the primary importance of the value of life. And here, like, there's the four different categories. So look at source number three. In the hierarchy of Jewish values, the saving of life is a priority, right? We'll do anything to save a life. You can eat on Yom Kippur, you can be Mechal Shabbos, Michal Yom Tov, it's a suffix, right? And we'll obviously have to categorize that. So it supersedes virtually all other obligations and mandates virtually unlimited effort, right? Unlimited effort. So here, look at number one. Even where the risk to life is small or it's unclear, like a person will say, no, you know what? It's not, the risk isn't so great or it's not so clear. I'll give you an example. Rav Moshe has a tshuva about, let's say a person, God forbid, breaks a bone on Shabbos. Are you obligated? Do you go to the hospital? Do you have an obligation to go to the hospital for a broken bone? So somebody might say, it's a broken bone. It's on my pinky toe. It's not such a big deal. You break a bone. Obviously, if it was far more severe, you'd go. Rav Moshe says, how does a person know? You know what it did. It cut an artery. It didn't cut an artery. It did something to your body in a way. It's inside your body. You have no idea. You think that it's a small, it's a small risk to your life. And it might be. Might be, in fact, true. And even if it comes out that it is and it was a small risk, it's okay. You can take that chance. So that means, and even if it's unclear to you, and certainly if it's unclear to you, virtually any risk to life. Since a person does not know, now you have to be normal, you can't go crazy, you stub your toe, that doesn't mean you think that's a risk to life. Right? You had something spicy, it's a risk to your life. And we're not saying that, obviously. But if you broke a bone, for example, that's an example he gives, you broke a bone, so you'd have to go to the hospital. I know a number of people, actually just last week, I was talking with somebody who felt it was yontif, and he chose not to go to the hospital for a certain ailment, a certain situation he had to deal with. Turns out he put himself in a greater risk and had to have a sense of possibly even far more significant circumstances. Thankfully, he was okay and everything worked out fine. But at the end of the day, you don't have to be firmer than halacha. So virtually any risk to life mandates extreme effort to avert that risk or more complications for that risk. That's number one. Number two, even where there's no guarantee that the life at risk will be saved, like you're not sure what will be. Maybe that person's very old. Maybe that person is already, you found them in a very precarious situation. Like, I don't know. So he says, this is all based on rabbinic literature. So even a small chance of success mandates extreme effort to save that life. So if there was no chance, like what's called no chance? Like, does anybody know that there's no chance? There's a chance. There's even a small chance. And as an addendum to that is even when one and two coexist, that is where the risk to life is small or indefinite and where success is unlikely in the event that the risk turns out to be real. Still, nonetheless, 3, even where the life to be saved is of low quality. You know, they're not going to be the same person that they were. They're going to have compromise. They're going to have a situation that's not going to be necessarily able to be repaired completely. Okay, doesn't matter. Life is a life. You know, having conversations with people, and of course, this is where things get a little bit tricky. And everybody and every family I know, people have very strong opinions about that. People have ethical wills, or even medical directives about their status and their states, and they want their families to be in a certain way. I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've participated in some of those conversations as a Rav with families, and there's arguing about, you know, the directives or what the quality of life is. You know, people would rather, in some situations, you know, pull the plug or make certain medical decisions that would end a person's life versus someone who would say they'd rather be in a certain state because they'd rather them be alive. Who knows what's called quality of life is, of course, something that is highly and hotly debated. And finally, number 4, we'll take a little break right after this, is even where the life to be saved is expected to be of short duration. Like, we don't know, maybe they'll be only able to live for a short period of time. And even when 3 and 4 coexist, that is where a life is of very poor quality, can be extended for only a short period of time. Still, nonetheless, there is still an obligation. It's not like you have a lessened obligation. The only time your obligation would be diminished, so it seems, as we'll say this now, is if there are other people who are attending to it. If, you know, just it's unnecessary for you to participate, so then obviously, then you can go back to doing what you were doing. This is true, I guess, parenthetically. Let's just say you have somebody who dies and there's a mace mitzvah and everybody has to tend to that mace that nobody else in their family would tend to. So there's an obligation of the community to stop what they're doing and to go and to take care of the mace mitzvah. Now, once people are taking care of that mace mitzvah, so then person go back to the base medrash and learn. So there's obviously parameters of that. But Bederech Klal, this rule is pretty, pretty clear. The obligation to save a life applies to everybody, not merely to doctors, not to nurses, to police officers, to firefighters, to, you know, health practitioners. Obviously, those are the people that are front lines and they know what to do. And whoever can be an assistance must do so, each, you know, of course, according to their means, what they're able to do. Now, sometimes a phone call is all a person can do. Sometimes meeting one's duty will require greater effort and sacrifice. Obviously, everything is the fee of the situation. Okay, so before we get to the second part of the Gemara and Lamed on Ayin Gimel, which is an additional biblical source, which we'll get to from a pasuk in Parshas Kisetze, first from Parshas Kedoshim, Osamen Adam Reecha. Let's just pause for a second and review for anybody who would like to just question just A, number 1, number 2, and then Rabbi Dr. Kivitatz's just kind of Judaism recognized the primary importance of the value of life in just those 4 scenarios. Any questions, any comments, concerns before we move on? If you do, just feel free to mute yourself. All clear? So far, straightforward? Thumbs up? Okay. Good? Yeah, okay, good. All right, so that's like, you know, basics to this sugya for now. Okay, now, if you look at the Gemara, this is going to be source number 4. The Gemara, which is really a hemshech, a continuation of source number 1, and when I say it's a hemshech, it's just later down on the page of the Gemara. If we're looking at Tzuras Hadaf, it would just be later down on Sanhedrin, on Ayin Gimel. So the Gemara points to a second biblical source that serves as the basis for the obligation to save endangered lives. This is where things are going to get a little bit meatier. Now, let's keep a question in the back of our minds. So the question we'll keep in the back of our minds is, why would the Torah include 2 separate psukim to teach the same principle? Like, anytime that happens, obviously there's a different limud, and that limud is part of what the Machlokes Rishonim and a commentary of the Achronim is so significant. So let's look at source number 4. The verse says, "Vaha mehocha nafka." Question is the imperative to save a life really derived from losamen adam re'echa? Mehosam nafka. So it quotes the Gemara in Maseches Bava Kamma as a cross-reference, Pe'alef Amud Beis. So is it not derived from what the Gemara sources? What's the pasuk that the Gemara sources? So the Gemara says, Avedas Gufo, Minayin, Talmud Loimar, Vashevosolo. What's Vashevosolo? The pasuk in Parshas Kisese is Vashevosolo. Now that's talking about the obligation of the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, to return a lost article. Now we're going to have to figure out what that means. What is the mitzvah of returning a lost article? What does that have to do with somebody who has to their life has to be saved. So the first question the Gemara asks is, don't just think of it, that it's talking about Lo Samad Al Davriecha, that's the only biblical source. What is the source that one must restore another person's body if it's in danger of being lost? So the Gemara says, Talmud Lomar, you shall return it. Not only his lost object, but also his endangered body to him. That's what it says. Imahosu ma'avamina hanimili b'nafshe, avamitrach omegar agore melo kamash melon. What does that mean? That means that if we had learned the obligation to save an endangered person only from the pasuk of that we just referred to, the pasuk in Devarim, Perek Chaf Beis Beis, in Parshas Kisese, the obligation to return a person's lost object, which is not only talking about returning his lost object, it's returning his endangered body. It says, if we would learn that the obligation to save an endangered person is only from the pasuk, you shall return him, Vashevosolo, you shall return him, I might have mistakenly thought, says the Gemara, that my responsibility, my chiyuv, is limited only to when I can save someone by myself. But there's no necessity to exert oneself to hire other people. I mean, if I can do it, good. But if I can't do it, then okay, so shalom aleichem. I'm not an EMT. I'm not a physician. I'm not able to do it. So maybe I have no obligation if I can't do it. Talmud Loma, the Gemara says, you know what? That this is the reason why mitrach omega agure emalo. You would think you don't have an obligation to do it. Kamash malon, you still do have an obligation. What's the obligation? That's the pasuk of Lo Samad Al Dam Re'echa. You cannot stand aside, which teaches a greater level of responsibility for saving lives by hiring others to do so when I'm personally unable to do it. That's the mashmos of the Gemara. The Gemara says, why is, you think that Lo Samad Al Dam Re'echa is the only pasuk? That's the only source? No. The Gemara says that there's another pasuk, Vahashevoso Lo. You shall return it to him. What's Vahashevoso Lo? Not just his object, but even his body. You would think, says the Gemara, again, the Gemara says that I would mistakenly think that my chiyuv, my obligation, is only limited to when I can do it, when I can respond by returning his lost body or his lost article to him. But if I'm unable to do it, so then I don't have a chiyuv, I can wash my hands of that obligation. So the Gemara says, no, kamash malon, that's not the case. That even in a situation where I myself can't do it, I still have an obligation. What's my obligation? Lo samur adam reyecho. So that's the Gemara says. This is the explanation as to why I don't have one pasuk, but I actually have two pasukim. I have two verses that are necessary. The second pasuk, which is really, vashevoso, which is really telling me that I have an obligation to return a person's body, his guf, his well-being to himself, doesn't limit to just my ability to do it. If it's a phone call or if it's a hiring of somebody, if it's anything that will make a person keep themselves safe, then I have that obligation by extension because of the pasuk of Lo Samad Al Dam Re'echa. That which what we understand is that the obligation to save another person's life can be derived from the obligation to return lost property. That's the obligation, even though that's second to what we learned previously, but that's just that it's later on in the Gemara. If a person is obligated to prevent another person from losing his property, so obviously the Kal V'chomer is, it stands to reason that that person is certainly obligated to ensure that he won't lose his life, right? That right, we're conscientious of that person. He lost his shoes. So we're going to bring his shoe back to him. We're going to bring his car back to him. We're going to bring his donkey back to him. We're not going to be sure to it that that person is going to have his life brought back to him. It's halachas kama v'kama, all the more so. So even so, the Torah records a specific obligation to save a life. Do not stand aside when your brother, when your fellow's blood is being shed. Now the extra chiyuv, the extra instruction teaches us that a person is obligated to make an effort and go out of his way to do so, including hiring others to save a life. This is still what we understand. So the Torah still needs the state to state the pasuk, you should return it to him, to teach a general responsibility of returning lost objects, right? That needs to be taught. By extension, the Gemara says, it's not just lost objects. Now, many people don't know that. The mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda applies not just to objects. It actually applies to people. Actually, I'll give you another source of how I know that that's true. One of the reasons why we know that's true is it's not the minig of the Ashkenazim, but there's a minig of the Anshei Sfard that they make the bracha of Baruch Shechiyonu V'kiyimonu V'giyonu L'zman Hazeh at a wedding, at a chuppah. Now, why? Now, sometimes, for example, I myself will do this, and many other rabbanim as well. Well, it's like a good introduction to the chuppah. Baruch Shechiyonu V'kiyimonu V'giyonu L'zman Hazeh. I'm not saying that, you know, that's not done even in Ashkenazic circles. It certainly is, but that's not a bracha. By the Anshei Sfar, they actually make a bracha. Baruch Asher Kiddushanu V'Shem HaMalchus. Right? They say Shechiyonu V'Kiyimonu V'Kiyonu L'Zman Hazeh. Now, why do they do that? Is it just because it's the new, obviously the most new relationship that we're celebrating by the by the wedding, by the couple that's coming together. No, so many of the commentators explain, you know why you say Shechianu? You say Shechianu because there's something that is being returned to itself. We know that before Brias Ha'adam, before the creation of man, so the Gemara Maseches Sota tells us that the bodies of the same, the souls rather, of the same entity are split into two different bodies, one into a zachar, one into a nekeva, one to a male and one to a female. So a wedding reconstitutes the souls, that's the concept of basher, the concept of soulmate, and even though they're in two different bodies, it's the reunification of the same soul. So many of the Sephardic commentaries say, you know why you say Baruch Shechianu? You say Baruch Shechianu because you're recognizing that the newness, it's not just that you're new in this relationship of a wedding, every wedding is new, but what you're celebrating is this is a Hashavas of Edus. You see that it's not just a lost article. It's also a lost person, that they were lost to themselves until they were able to find themselves. Why making a match is so significant that the Gemara in Maseches Sota, the very beginning, Beis Amud Aleph, Beis Amud Beis, talks about what the Ribbono Shel Olam does all day, Kaviyachol, the Rosh does a lot all day, right, is Mizavik Zivugin, because it's so important to bring matches together. They're lost from each other. So there's an idea that the general concept of Ashevosalo, to return it to him, is talking about the general responsibility of returning lost objects. By extension, it returns, it's the obligation to return a person's lost body to themselves. And by extension of that, Losam Radam Riecha means that even if it means that you yourself can't do it, somebody else has to do it. Somebody else has to be hired to do it. You cannot limit even your own limitations. You cannot limit the efforts that are necessary to save another person. And that could be something as basic as a phone call, walking over to somebody to put their mask on. It could be something as basic as just simply winking, nodding, smiling, sending a letter, sending a text message, whatever it is. And even if it is more and beyond that, that you have to hire somebody and cajole another person. So Al Chaskam of Akam all the more so. Now, it seems nonetheless a little bit peculiar why comparing saving a life is being compared to Hashavas Aveda. That seems like it's a nice drush of what's the pshat in that. Like, what does that mean? So there's a lot of discussion in the Achronim. I'll just share with you Shlomo Kluger and Chochmas Shlomo in his commentary on Choshen Mishpat. There are a number of Achronim who present novel ideas onto the Gemara's comparison that we just learned between saving a life and a Hashavas Aveda. What's the comparison? So all of the Achronim, they infer from the Gemara that the only difference between Lo Samad Adam Riecha and Hashavas Aveda is the requirement to hire someone else to save a life, right? That's what we learn. That's what we call the Pashat Pshat in the Gemara. That's Pshat in the Gemara. That's what the Gemara says what the Pshat is. But that the only difference between Lo Samad Adam Riecha alone and Hashavas Aveda is the obligation that a person has to extend beyond themselves, right? That's what the Achronim say, that we infer is the maskana, the conclusion of the Gemara. That's the only chiluk, that's the only difference. But there's a whole debate in the Achronim that there's way more than that. And I'll share with you one. There's a lot more. If you're interested offline, I can share with you more than that. I wasn't able to put in the source, but I'm sharing this to you like kind of on the fly. Rav Shlomo Kluger and Chachmas Shlomo, again, is in his commentary on Choshen Mishpat on the Din and Shulchan Aruch, which we're about to quote. In the next source, he notes that the principle, there's a concept of zaken ve'eno lefikvodo. What's the concept of zaken ve'eno lefikvodo? It's a concept the Gemara discusses. So, it's Gemara above Metzia. The Gemara of zaken ve'eno lefikvodo, the principle is that if a distinguished individual, a zaken, an elderly person, finds an item that would be embarrassing for him to return. There's a lot of examples. Person finds difficult, be embarrassing from the return. He's pater from the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. It's Gemara Bava Metzia, Daf Laman Amud Beis. That's the Gemara Bava Metzia. That if, again, if it's the concept of Zakin Ve'enu Lefi Kvodo, then he's pater. Now, that's a sugi in and of itself. Maybe get that to another time. What does that mean? A Zakin, an elderly, who's considered elderly? Not just the CDC standards of what's considered elderly, but Ve'enu Lefi Kvodo, what's considered Lefi Kvodo? A lot of people will say that's beneath my honor. But really might not be beneath, your honor. Okay, we'll see what that means. But nonetheless, the Gemara passes la locha that a person's potter from the mitzvah of Shavas Aveda. Now, Shlomo Kluger suggests that the Gemara's omission of the zakin ve'enu lefi chvodo principle as an added measure of lo samad adam re'echa, it implies something. What does it imply? It implies that the principle exists for life-saving missions. I mean, what we understand from that, if the life-saving mission will cause someone embarrassment, so he's not required to perform the mission. That's what is assumed from Shlomo Kluger's maskana, right? That's why it was omitted. That means, again, if the idea of zaken ve'enu lefi chvodo, that person's part of the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, his conclusion is that if the life-saving mission will cause someone embarrassment, I'm not sure how or why, but it would be cause someone embarrassment. Now, is it that it's going to cause the person who's going over to save the life embarrassment, or is it going to cause the person whose life you're saving embarrassment? We would assume that if you're trying to save somebody's life, they might be embarrassed, but at least their lives will be saved. I would assume that they'd rather be alive than be saved from embarrassment. But I think what they're talking about is the person who's going to save that person's life. For some reason, it's if the sushtel is in fact correct, that maybe it's beneath that person. It will embarrass that person to go to embarrass himself to try to save that person. So it seems that he's potter. He's not required to perform the mission. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Gris Moshe and Yerodea, he rejects this. He says there's no way that that's his pshat. He says that his assertion is incorrect. He considers it an absolute, it's a toos otzim. It's a complete mistake. There's no way that he said that. There's no way that that's the maskan. In fact, Rav Moshe says that the idea, the notion, the principle of zakin ve'enol k'lifi chvodo is quantified by how the finder or the rescuer that we're talking about would deal with the situation if it was his own property. I think this is gevaldik, an important insight. Meaning, how do you determine if, in fact, he would be putter? So if he would forgo his own property because of the embarrassment of retrieving it, right? So if the embarrassment of retrieving his own property is too great, which nobody's going to do that, but let's assume it was too great. So he's not required to embarrass himself to save somebody else's property. Right? That's specifically to the case of a karka. Now, when it comes to saving a life, one would certainly do whatever possible to save his own life, right? Obviously. You do anything, even if you thought you were flailing and being embarrassment, even if it caused tremendous busha. And so therefore the same standards apply to someone else, and one is required to save a life, even if it will cause tremendous embarrassment. That's how Rav Moshe understands really this sugya. He says that no, there's no way Rav Shlomo Kluger came to that maskana, that in the case of Zakin Ve'enu Lefi Kvodo, he's potter from the mitzvah Shavuos Aveda, who adin, that also comes to apply in this case of saving a person's life, because there's a connection between Shavuos Aveda and saving a person's life, not just the property, but the person. You would think that he's potter if it's beneath you. What does it mean, beneath me? I'm going to walk over to the guy. Maybe it's beneath me to walk over to that guy because it's beneath me. Who am I? I have to tell you to put a mask on. I got to tell you to social distance. It's beneath me. I'm a law-abiding person. The Torah says that even if it's going to embarrass you, so it's worth it, because he says, again, if you make the cheshbon based on your own, let's like treat yourself. Think about how you would treat yourself and then you treat another person yet in the same way. V'yavta l'recha kamocha. What's the kamocha? How you would treat yourself. You'd do anything to save your life. You'd like stand on your head, act like a, you know, like a jokester, like a prankster, like a clown. You do anything you can, even just to say, obviously to save your life. So what then? Similarly, you would do that to say, you should, says Rav Moshe, same, in the same way, save another person's life. And therefore the same standards as they apply. So even if it's going to cause tremendous embarrassment, that's pshat in the Gemara. That's why we come to these two, you know, psukim, and how this drasha, there's the Gemara, and then there's this explanation of the achronim. As I told you, there's like a whole litany of other examples. Just don't want to run out of time for a little bit of the time we have left. But if anybody's interested offline to just discuss some of those points, I'm glad to do so. All right, let's just take some questions. I guess if anybody has any comments, don't want to miss that opportunity. Yes, Jerry.
So it's just writing notes. You're saying that saving a life is like a Shavuos Aveda. You gave an example of under the chuppah, you're reuniting a lost soul. It's really double. Two lost souls, pieces of each other. So
it's one soul that's being reunited.
Oh, that's in two parts. Okay.
Yeah.
So is that concept expanded into like spiritual saving of a life, like pidyon shavuim? Like I have a tzedakah here. Yad La'achim, a Jewish girl, you know, who is in, you know, a Muslim, or someone who's not Shomer Torah Mitzvahs, you're saving them spiritually. So is that a concept that also gets expanded beyond the physical as well?
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, the answer is yes. Where that becomes a little bit interesting is like, if somebody who's the arbiter of their own definition of what that means for your spiritual well-being, like then that can go like spiral in a lot of different directions, right? There's the standard normative Shulchan Aruch law-abiding practice, but absolutely. In fact, you know, a number of years ago, just I was at a conference and just the question of what is the mitzvah of kiruv? Is there a mitzvah of kiruv, right? Obviously saving somebody's physical life, but is there an obligation that we have to do outreach? You know, you have Or Sameach, Yaveh Shatar, you have Chabad, like, why do they do that? Like who's, were you ever at the Kotel where you saw like the Chabad Rabbanim that are standing there and they're encouraging, or not just the Kotel, you've been anywhere and they're telling you to do something, you know, at an airport. I was at an airport where I saw this encounter wasn't so pleasant. They were very aggressive. And the guy said like, excuse me, I'm like just walking to my gate, like leave me alone. Like I'm not, what's your interest in me? Like, I'm not interested in you being interested in me. Like, there was like a very contentious, but the answer is like, you're putting on tefillin and you're keeping kosher and you're keeping Shabbos and you're being shown Torah mitzvos, kedas v'kedin. It is not only that it affects me, it's my obligation to be sure to it, that as I would help you heal your body, there's an obligation to do it, you know, the way you're supposed to do it. And obviously, as I mentioned, there's like normative halacha, and then there's like outside the boundaries of that, which is, you know, you really should wear a bekacha and you should shave your head and you should really, you know, eat, you know, pass this for all year. Like, again, ain't no davar seif to this. So you have to really know what it is. Is it basic, normative, regular halacha? We do. The answer to your question is yes, we have an obligation. It's not just the kiruv professionals, the rabbanim, everybody, you know, everybody's table is a Shabbos table. Everybody has the opportunity to teach somebody something. That is an obligation, sure, that we have to feel. And that's not just me just saying that because I believe in it wholeheartedly. I believe in it because it's a source. It's a source that the Gemara Masechet Shavuos, as Gemara says, Kol Yisrael Revim Zeh Bezeh, B'mitzvos. You see, that last word, many people don't know. Everybody knows Kol Yisrael Revim Zeh Bezeh, right? I said this in my Hoshana Rabbah drasha. Right, the Orev, the Revos, the Arvos, Kol Yisrael Revim Zeh Bezeh. We're an Orev, but people don't know the last word, which is B'mitzvos. I have an obligation, I have a guarantor to be sure that, hey, did you put your tefillin on today? People are offended by that, and they feel like you're encroaching into my territory. But the answer is, I want to know that you put your tefillin on today. Did you eat healthy food today? Right.
And I didn't know that last word. I didn't know that last word.
Yeah, many people like you, and likewise, you know, let my people go, right? Everybody knows that phrase, but they don't know the latter part of this, so that they shall serve me. The Rosh Hashanah doesn't want us to go haphazardly. But look at the Gemara Shavuos. The Gemara says, Kol Raven Zeh Bezeh B'mitzvos. We have an obligation to, you know, encourage people to do mitzvos.
So that one tzedakah that I mentioned, you know, where, let's say, a Jewish woman is trapped in an Arab village, she's alive, but she's not living a spiritual fulfillment, so... That's like you're saving a life. It's not just the physical saving of life. It's
100%, 1,000%.
And the Ephrat organization, which we talked about, that's a physical.
Right. And I would add to that. Yeah, the answer is yes. And I would add to that the emotional state. Like, you have to do anything you can to help the emotional state. There's the most, you know, it's not just the physical state, but it's the emotional state. And it's the, obviously, we believe and care about the religious state as well. Right. Dr. Seinfeld.
So I don't know if you're going to get into this in our next class, but the obligation of someone to put themselves at risk to save another life.
Absolutely.
And there are two events in some more contemporary history that I think show extremes in people's response. The first is the death of Kitty Genovese in the 1960s, where a woman is murdered at, there were dozens of witnesses, either eyewitnesses or hearing her shouts, and they did absolutely nothing. And this became, of course, celeb in the 1960s. And to me, that exemplifies how you're not supposed to do lo tamod adam reyecha. And then the other event was in the 1990s.
You mean you're in violation of lo tamod?
In violation of lo tamod adam reyecha. And then the flip side of this was in the 1990s, there was a sarin gas attack in the Tokyo subway system. And the thing that struck me as a physician was looking at the bystander physicians and nurses who immediately rushed in and started to tend to these victims, wow, not knowing what they were confronting and definitely putting themselves at risk. And then you see the first responders come with the full hazmat, that much more than we use now for coronavirus. This is, we're talking about people coming into a chemical or a gas attack as a totally different order of magnitude. So in the first instance of Kitty Genovese, you have people who did absolutely nothing. What is, you know, where do you draw the line? How much does someone, if you're not a martial arts expert, and are you going to go confront this guy with a knife or a gun who's murdering someone else? And if you're not properly protected in the event of some type of chemical attack, you know, where do you draw the line in a halachic sense?
I mean, yeah, right? Yeah, for sure. As a part of this, that's a huge part of this lecture series. It's going to be part of one of the days we'll dedicate specifically and exclusively to that, because that is a super super important part of the sugya. Impossible without those parameters to really understand the sugya properly, because in both of those extreme examples, we see that there are so many permutations of that. Obviously, you know, to what extent you're protected and equipped and able to protect yourself could be that you're engaging in a suicide mission. You might not be able to help anybody else, and you might not yourself be able to save your life. I mean, what does that mean? You know, we know so many stories of, you know, people, soldiers in the IDF, the American military, who jumped on grenades to save other people. Was that correct? We know people that put themselves in harm's way at 9/11. We know people that put themselves in harm's way, you know, during the AIDS outbreak. We know people that are doing that now. And then there are people that don't do anything. I mean, those are the two bookends, and we have to figure out really clearly what that is. And Halacha does discuss it. And part of the literature that we're going to focus is actually on suicide, because there's a lot that's written about that. If you know, and that will dovetail into the different areas. We'll just identify that as what we're going to do, but we're going to save it for next time. Or I think I have it in the third class. I'm not sure if I have it in the second one. I think I have it in the third one. But absolutely, it's a huge, huge part of this section. And just, I guess, one last, you know, maybe we'll stop here, because I think we're at 5 to 12. I don't want to take it too far and not stick to the time. We're going to see just in sources 5 and 6, you can look at those yourself, or just we'll jump off with that next time, that we see that the idea of saving a life, including the considerable effort, is ruled by in the Shulchan Aruch. And you'll see that in Choshen Mishpat, that's the Shlomo Kluger's commentary on this din in Choshen Mishpat. But it's also this quote in Halacha. But if you look at the Rambam adds other elements to it. See if you can on your own find in the Rambam's laws of murder and saving life. And if you look at, first of all, that whole parak is worth learning, but this is parak Aleph Halacha Yudalad, where I put the English there as well. If you look, the idea of Mosrim, of someone who's conspiring to harm a colleague, or if you, right? And there are other examples that he gives that are not included in the Shulchan Aruch version of it. Now, it's interesting to understand how that works. Now, usually the Shulchan Aruch and the Rambam are aligned, right? The Mechaber and the Rambam usually in Halacha are aligned. So why were those things added by the Rambam and other things not added in Shulchan Aruch? That's a sukkah also in and of itself. When do we figure out, and how do we figure out who those people are and what those cases are practically? All right, but I think for now, this is an introduction to this topic. I hope you find it. I know that we're going to find it meaningful, because it's very relevant to today's times. And it, of course, by extension, relevant to certainly the case that you mentioned and the others that follow. But as it's relevant to today's times, it's taking responsibility for our actions. It's taking responsibility even for people's other actions who are acting derelict, irresponsible, rebellious. And what is our role? And and the idea of Vashevosalo, the idea of returning people's body, their self well-being, their emotional state, their religious state, but also, of course, here in the case of what we're dealing with here as this pandemic rages on, the idea of what is our obligation in the physical sense as well. All right, so let's stop here. We'll pick up next Monday. You could share with me comments, concerns, just offline if you want, but I'm excited about this learning together. I really am. Gives us a chance to look inside and see the sources. If you want to see the Surah Hadaf, you could also tell me that. Like, I'm looking at regular, like the main sources. Like, if you want to look at the Gemara inside and see the Shlomo Kluger inside, if you want to see the, you know, the other Gemaras, like on the actual Daf, I'm happy to share those with you. I just have a program that I pull them from, which is, you know, I just put it on a source sheet. I find the source sheets will be helpful for this type of learning. Hopefully you did as well. This way, if we share in the notes or get it emailed, hopefully we'll be able to continue. So we'll pick up next week from the Din in Shulchan Aruch and from the Rambam, and then we're going to jump into how much the next section is, how much money or personal resources do you have to share and expend, but then we're obviously going to get to what are the parameters of what you have to do and when you're exempt, because clearly there's an exemption. And how do we know there's an exemption? Because first of all, Shlomo Kluger writes that there's a sense of an exemption. Rav Moshe disagrees that that's what he meant, but that's what he writes. That's number one. And number two is that we see there's a connection between Vahashevoso and there's a Ptur from the Gemara Bava Metzia of a Zakein V'Eino Lefi Chvodo. We see there's a concept that there's a situation where there are certain mitzvahs where people are potter from. So is there a situation where a person would be in violation of halacha if they got themselves involved? Maybe you have no obligation to do that. Maybe if you can't protect yourself, or maybe going into a gang raid with no martial arts or no materials to protect yourself or the person who's being harmed. So maybe you're doing something that's in a violation. Maybe it's an issur. All right. So let's stop here. Let me wish you guys a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day. Wonderful learning together. Rosh Chodesh Tov. Next Monday, same bad time, same bad channel. Have a blessed day.
You too, Rabbi. Thank you.
Bye.